You're listening to The Purple Mystic, a podcast for the modern witch, with your host, Natalie Sedgwick. Today I am interviewing my friend Anuj Elvis, who is from India. Good morning!
Good morning!
It's like good evening over there. It's almost, what, 9 o'clock in the evening there?
It's about 8 o'clock in the evening.
8 o'clock, yeah, okay. Yeah. It's not too late. That's good. That's good. Because I don't know about you, but by 10 o'clock at night, I'm starting to peter a little unless I get some coffee into the system.
Oh, yeah. It's the same with me as well.
I used to be total night owl, and the older I get, the harder I have I have with staying up later at night. So, it is
You? I am 40, so I keep telling myself that 40 is the new 20.
That's what I've been telling myself for the last 6.5 years.
Yeah, but really coffee for me. I'm more of a tea person, so yeah, I love my tea.
Well, I drink both. Here in the South, we drink both. Although we drink a lot of iced tea, so you know, we'll make big buckets of tea and just pour us a big old glass of some ice and. Especially in the summertime when it gets real hot. But I drink a lot of both, copious amounts of both. I wanted to just chat with you a little bit because you are a practicing witch. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's probably not very common in your part of the world. So talk about how you came to your path and what you're doing now. I know you had a few groups out there, right? You teach some classes and things like that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Well, I don't know how to start this, but calling somebody a witch in my country, it's really derogatory and scary and abusive and like somebody you're cursing at someone, or you know, it's all those things, along with a police action can be filed against you because it is illegal to practice witchcraft in my country.
Really?
And yeah, and there are still women who are beheaded for being a witch, and you know, people accusing them of practicing witchcraft and things like that. However, I am still India's first male witch, so I think either I've been lucky or been very clever.
Well, maybe a little of both. That's incredible, because there is still really, even here in the United States, there's still a bit of a stigma related. Now, granted, the community of Salem, Massachusetts has done a lot to kind of open people's eyes to the understanding that the practice of witchcraft is not what the Christian church has made it out to be, because, you know, of course, we have a large Christian population. And here I live in the Bible Belt, the North part of Texas. And so here there are a lot of people that don't accept it. You know, they see it as evil, or they say you're satanic, which is ridiculous because we don't believe in Satan. That's purely Christian concept. We think we're perfectly responsible for our own actions. Absolutely. And so I have been surprised that people have not been more negative towards me. My neighbors either don't care, or they know, but they just don't even say anything, or they're very supportive. So I'm kind of curious, do your immediate neighbors know of your faith? Or since you are out there, putting yourself out there teaching classes, what's been some of the reaction? Do you see a growing curiosity about the practice? Do you not call it witchcraft? You call it something else to kind of, you know, like nature-based religion. We'll use a lot of clever terms here when we think we're going to get something negative. So we'll say, oh, I practice a nature-based faith. And then when people start asking questions, we'll give a little more information. So how about you?
I have never been comfortable with the word witch. I don't call myself a witch. People call me a witch in a positive and a negative both way, but I don't really label myself. Here in India, a lot of people who practice like me, we would like to call us I mean, we like to call ourselves as healers. That's the term that everybody uses here. However, I am the only one who practices voodoo. So everybody knows Anuj Elvis who practices voodoo. So I am out and open about it. I don't really care. But as long as I don't have... So the law in India is a little tricky here, Natalie, because as long as you don't have anything related to black magic written in the ads or in your conversation or in the way you promote yourself, I think you're sorted. But if you do have anything that is related to black magic, then you might get into trouble. That's how it is. And I practice voodoo. Voodoo is a religion, so nobody can really challenge me on, practicing black magic. I mean, even though media has really tried to portray voodoo, which is an absolutely beautiful religion, but they've tried to portray it as, a black magic or dark magic. Yeah.
But, you've got movies like The Serpent and the Rainbow that I think really forwarded the idea back in the 80s that voodoo was something to be feared and avoided. And then, you know, you've got the whole idea that, you know, people are sacrificing chickens and, you know, all of these things. It's often portrayed as something negative, which I think is unfortunate because I think if people understood it better, there would be more curiosity and less fear.
You know, I think the reason why India is okay with the idea of somebody practicing voodoo is because voodoo is very, very close to the Indian tantra. And, our rituals are almost the same. The sacrifices are same. I mean, I don't really sacrifice animals. Mm-hmm. But people have to understand that the reason why they were sacrificing, one of the reasons why they were sacrificing animals in the rituals in Haiti was because, you know, the animal would be sacrificed to the Loa and honored and life versus life or whatever. And then the entire village will come together and have a massive meal. And right. Probably that was the only meal that a lot of people would get that night. You know what
it's
I mean?
The only meal. But, you know, meat was not something that was wasted.
Easily available and wasted, yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, Indian Tantra also, if you look at Goddess Kali and her worship, she's offered, there are people who offer animals, or if they don't want to offer animals, there are certain vegetables that are offered to her and, so on and so forth. So I think that way, I think people are okay with the idea of somebody practicing voodoo. I want to go back to the video when you said Christian Bell, that kind of took me to my childhood. Did you know that I was born into Christianity? My family is in New Delhi, which is the capital of India, my family is a very well-known Christian family. We are all families, we are all priests and brothers and bishops and stuff like that. So I was training to become a priest, which I did, but I gave up because the idea of Christianity and the philosophy didn't resonate with me. I couldn't, put my faith into a religion whose basis was, blood and gore and sacrifice and killing people and, lies and everything like that. So it didn't really work out with me. That's at the age of 13. That's when I started asking questions and renounced my faith, if you want to call that. And then,
right.
Not for me.
Because when I was younger, I had a lot of questions about the church I was raised in. I was raised Church of Christ. Which, if you're not familiar with the Church of Christ, it's very, they try to be very orthodox. They go by strictly what the Bible says. The problem is the Bible's very contradictory. Yeah, and true. I had a lot of issues growing up with it myself. You know, I remember asking my mom when I was very young, I was sitting in church one day looking around. I asked my mom, if Jesus spoke to all nations, why are there only white people here? And she got very upset with me. And, I wanted to be a foreign exchange student. I wanted to go to Norway, and I was nominated by my teachers to go to Russia as a student ambassador before the wall fell. And my mom wouldn't let me go because I would have no way to go to church for 3 weeks or 6 months or a year, however long I was going to be in Norway. So I was like, but the Catholic Church is everywhere. And my mom got so upset with me. So were you raised Catholic, or was it Lutheran, or was it just some other?
I was raised Baptist.
Baptist. Wow. Baptist. Really?
Yes.
Whoa. Now that's a.
Whew, yeah.
Southern Baptist Convention down here. Let me tell you.
I know how they are. Yeah. I know. You know the. You know what? I've always said that if Jesus was to come back, he will not recognize Christianity.
No, I don't.
He think would he say would. That. Yeah, he would say that. I mean, you know what? Really, bitch, is that what I said? You know?
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, you know, that was one of the things that took me away from the church when I was studying to become an apologist, because I converted to Catholicism shortly before my marriage. My family all thinks I converted after I married, but I actually converted before I married. I was in the process of converting when I met my husband. I wasn't fully converted till after we were married, but I was taking the RCIA classes, but it takes like a year. And it was actually my best friend at the time that was helping me because she was Catholic, and we had to keep it a secret from my mother. So the thing was, is that it was when I really got into the Catholic faith and started studying to become an apologist that I realized that things were not right, and I just couldn't accept it. And I still had too many issues with what you know was going on, and of course, obviously, some of the abuses were very upsetting to me. And I don't think that a lot of what's being taught as doctrine in the church is anything related to what Christ spoke of or taught or anything of that nature. So I fully agree with you on that.
In my family, you know, we were never really allowed to ask questions because living your life according to the word of God was the way of life.
That's right.
That is how we were supposed to live. But then, you know, when I was about 14 or 15, I started preaching in, you know, in cottage meetings. You know what are cottage meetings? You know, you gather a couple of people in the house and then you preach so that they come to the main church.
Right.
So basically recruiting for the church. So
exactly.
So anyway, I was doing that and everything. And, you know, my pastor used to tell me that my ministry is a healing ministry and a prophecy ministry because I used to prophesy using the word of God and tell people that this will happen, that will happen. And people used to come from, you know, faraway places. It was crazy. And my mom was used to freak out. But she was happy because I was doing the Lord's work. But, you know, so it all started with that. And then, but my way of healing people was very different from my fellow priests, if you know what I mean. I would have a different process. I would gather oils and herbs and mix them. And I used to do, I had four, you know, stones, river stones with me. And I used to do something with them. And I used to predict, you know, people's future using those, which was crazy. I still have those with me. Now I understand that what I was doing is called elemental magic. But using the elements. But then you have to understand that I'm talking about 1990, 92, 93. In India, there was no internet. We had no books on witchcraft. I didn't even know what I was doing is called witchcraft.
Right.
No. In a way, I knew that because it was against the word of God. So it was something that the Gentiles will do. So it's against the word of God. So it's witchcraft. That I knew. But then forget about Wicca. The word Wicca came into my repertoire, I think, in 2008 is when I learned about, you know, what I am doing. Some of it falls in the category of Wicca. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
Because, because we had no access to internet, we had no books on the Western or European witchcraft practices or craft of the wise, as I would like to call it. But then, you know, I used to work with a company called Capital One, a credit card company.
Oh, yes. I have a credit card with Capital One. Yep. They also do my business banking for my speech pathology business.
Oh, lovely. I hope they're good to you.
They have been for the most part, yes.
So I used to work with them. I mean, when I say I used to work with them, I used to work in the call center that they had here in India. I used to work for the UK process, not for the US clients. So basically I worked here in India for about 3 to 6 months, and then there was some competition and I won and I went to the UK, and that's when my real journey started. And I met my high priestess there, and I she told me that this is this and this is that, and so on, and rest is history.
Very good. Now, you joined a group that I had on Facebook with Timothy Roderick. Tequila Aguayo, who is known in the YouTube circuit as Lady Grave Dancer, started a group with my cousin Trina, and they decided to go back to basics and do the year to day program, because neither of them had actually formally done a year to day program. And Trina approached Timothy Roderick and asked him if he would participate in the group so that if people had questions, they could ask him directly. And he agreed, and I'm very thankful that he did, because by the end of that first year and a day, I was one of a handful of people that was still contributing. And I believe you joined in on the first year group, or was it? Yeah, you came in later with the first year group, I believe, because Timothy asked me to run a second year group for him as he was working on the second year book. And then you joined in on that one as well. And you were very active in that one. And I really felt like those groups were very edifying. So let me ask you, I know you lead workshops there in India, and do you promote them as being Wiccan or witchcraft, or do you simply promote it as being an earth-based healing type of religion when you promote these?
I promote them as Wicca.
Okay.
Yeah.
How is that being received? Does it vary depending on where you are in the country? Are you working, are you doing these outside of India? Or, are you getting a lot of negative feedback from that? What's the reception?
I think a bit of all of what you said, because I mean, my clients are international and domestic. I mean, I have clients in India and I have clients abroad. But I think it also depends on the kind of clients that you have. Majority of my clients are either celebrities or politicians. So I'm safe that way. You know what I mean? They cannot crucify me for practicing witchcraft, because they come to me to get solutions.
Right. Absolutely.
And
about some of the celebrities that come to you.
It's
what kind of, you don't have to mention any names right now. Maybe I might ask you later. But since we don't want to out anybody on air, and who knows who's going to be listening to this podcast, not that many people, unfortunately, yet. But as the listenership grows and as my podcast grows, because I'm still in the newbie stage of my podcast, The celebrities, are they, I mean, these are people that are very well known internationally, or people that are really well known within India, or a little of both?
Well, some of them are really known well internationally as well, and some of them are really, really famous in India.
Because I've got to tell you, I'm a huge Bollywood fan. I absolutely love
Dancing Around the Tree.
Yes, and Neil and Nikki, they get me. So, it's the costumes. Well, I don't want to say costumes, the regalia and the colors and the music, and just the, I've always felt like Indian culture was, I don't really know how to put this, very almost happy. Like it just has a vibrant vibe to me. And it always appealed to me. I always liked it. So,
will it be safe to say that you may have been Indian in one of your lives?
I don't know. And I've never had a past life regression done, but it's weird because I've always been drawn very much to ancient Egyptian culture as well. When I was younger, I chalked it up to the fact that I got to see Tut's treasures when I was a child. I was in preschool. We were still living in Colorado at the time. And they brought Tut's treasures to the museum. And there was something about the blue in the mask of his sarcophagus that I had to touch it. My little finger kept reaching out. And of course, the teacher is grabbing my finger. Don't touch it. You're not supposed to touch it. And I'm like, but I felt compelled to. I had to. You know, but yeah, I mean, I've always been very, very, you know. Oh, and as you know, story I haven't shared with a whole lot of people, but I started seeing, getting messages from, you see, the thing is, my husband has been trying to get a job in social work. He's a licensed social worker. He's been licensed since 2012. He graduated in 2011, put off taking the licensing exam because he was nervous about it, but finally, he missed the cutoff date to reschedule the exam because he'd already rescheduled it like six times and he had to take it, passed it the first time out and could not get a job in the field. Everybody kept telling him it was because he didn't have the right kind of experience or not enough experience. And so this had been going on since 2012 and he got laid off from his job in optics in December of 2010. And at that time, I was starting my speech pathology practice. But I really went full on in July of 2011. And at that point, he was kind of working for me. He graduated with his master's in social work in May of 2011. So he was a new graduate at that time. And he worked for me for 6 years, helping me to run my practice. And, you know, over the years, he just never could get traction. He had lots of interviews, but nothing was really given. You know, some of the interviews seemed to go really well, and then he'd get passed over, and he was getting very depressed. And then low around November or December of this past year, weird things started to happen. I had a friend that just out of the blue, he was one of the Witches of the Moon. And he messaged the group in our group text and he said, you know, I've been working with Ganesh to remove obstacles and you know, improve my life. He felt like I should tell you all. So I'm telling you. And I was like, that's weird, because I'd had a dream 2 days before. I'm not sure if you know Alexander Cabot. Are you friends with him?
I do. I don't think so. I'm friends with him, but I do know him.
Okay. Well, he had taken a trip to India for his birthday 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And in the dream that I had right before this happened with Hunter, I had a dream that I was in India with Alexander. And I guess with him, because he had been and I had never been. And I was just going, oh, this is great. Like, I'm like absorbing all of the people and the culture and the, you know, the sounds and the smells. And I'm just like, oh, you know, fascinated by all of it. And I was like a kid in a candy store. And I'm just looking around going, oh, this is great. And then this beautiful elephant is beautifully decorated. It had this elaborate, beautiful, I want to say blue and yellow headdress on. It was very elaborate, and it's walking towards it. Like, we're walking towards it. It's walking, like, coming down the street, right? And I walk up to this elephant, and I'm stroking the trunk, and I said, oh, you are so beautiful. And he spoke to me, and he says, I am Ganesh. Wow. I am here to help you. And I woke up at that moment and I was like, man, that was weird. So 2 days later, when Hunter tells the group, I've been working with Lord Ganesh, he said, normally I wouldn't say anything, but he felt like I should tell you all. So I'm telling you. And I was like, that was weird. So I was like, okay, I'll set that aside. That was just a strange coincidence. Right now, I do not believe in coincidences, but I'm telling myself that's a strange coincidence. So then a couple days later, I'm trying to remember what happened after that. Oh, yeah. I remember. I had gotten a Llewellyn's witch's calendar for Yule from my family. And I hadn't had a chance to take it to the office yet. So I took it over to my office to hang it up. And I realized I hadn't changed the calendar from November to December. So I was like, oh, you know, well, that's fine. I mean, it's a new calendar. I'm just going to take it down and get rid of it. And something told me, you should look at December before you throw this calendar out. So I flipped to December, and guess who's on?
Lord Ganesh.
Yes. And I was like, what the what? What? And I'm sitting there thinking, that's just too many weird things in 1 week's time. I mean, this is like within a week and a half. So that's what I asked you, because I was like, you know, everybody's so sensitive these days about cultural appropriation, which in this terms
crazy.
Of I don't really understand that, because I you know, we believe that we have lived many lifetimes. So, you know, why? Hold on 1 second. Hold on one moment, please. I have to step out for just one quick second.
All right.
So sorry about that. That was my spousal unit calling about a situation with one of the companies we contract with. So I apologize. So, yeah, so that's when I came to you, because, you know, everybody's so sensitive about this cultural appropriation, but we believe we've lived many lifetimes. So who knows what you were and why you're called to what you're called. But I will tell you, as soon as I spoke with you, I did what you recommended. Harold got the job. On the spot.
Wow. Oh,
he got
wow.
the job on the spot. And it was 2 weeks prior to all of this COVID-19 stuff breaking out. So right exactly when we needed it, because my business has been taking a hit. You know, there's a lot of clients that don't want us to come out and see them because of COVID-19, because we work with medically fragile people. The group homes are in complete lockdown. So we can see some of the clients via online methods, but some of the clients just are not, you know, mentally capable of doing an online session. So we, you know, have them on hold until all this is over. And it's taken a financial toll. So the fact that he got the job right when he did, right after I did what you recommended, has really impacted me deeply.
Wow. I'm so happy.
It's amazing.
But
I'm still trepidatious about talking about it, because I don't want people to go, well, you're not, you know, Hindu, you know, you're not Hindu.
I know.
You know, my, you know, and I mentioned that to my husband, because I told my husband about it, because he's very up and down with my practices, my religious practices. Some days he's very supportive. Some days he's like, I just can't get behind you on this. You know, this is going to be the cause of our divorce or whatever. And then the next is like, I'm sorry, I'll try to be more understanding. So, you know, when I told him the thing about the cultural appropriation, he turned around and he goes, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard come out of your mouth. And I excuse me? And he goes, well, he's a god, right? Well, yeah. He goes, so then wouldn't he apply to anybody he wants to appeal to? And I was like, well, yeah, I guess. I mean,
yeah.
I guess you're right. You know, because if he's speaking to you, I guess he's speaking to you then.
Of course.
I was like, okay, then. Well, then, you know, so it was, but I wanted you to know that, yeah, he got the job. The very next interview he went to, he got the job on the spot.
Congratulations. I'm so happy.
Thank you. I'm very happy. And like I said, the timing couldn't have been better, because if he didn't have a steady paying job, I don't know what we'd be doing right now.
Well, you know what, Natalie, I've always believed that, I don't know how, whether you guys do this, you know, in the US or not, but what we have this practice in India that whatever our leftover food is, especially rice, we put it outside of our houses for birds. You know, on the terrace, we can put for the birds, and on the, I mean, if on the front porch we can put for the street dogs or whatever. So I really, really believe in this, that God has designed the system in such a way, whoever the God is, you know, the divine, let's be safe and say that, has designed the system in such a way that he makes food available for animals and birds through us. And animals and birds, they don't have an ATM card. They don't have a steady job. You know, they don't work in corporates like we do. Yet he takes care of their food and daily needs through us. So if he can do that, or Gaia can do that for her own children, why will they not do it for us?
Right.
Because they've put them on this planet and they've put us on this planet. And, you know, and this theory is coming straight from the Bible, by the way, because my conditioning is that.
Right.
So, you know, there is a verse in Bible that I'm quoting in, paraphrasing.
About the sparrow, whatever. And how God, you know, if God takes care of the sparrow, why would he not take care of you?
Yeah.
For which he knows every number of hair upon your head.
Yeah. Preach, yeah. Preach, girl, preach.
Yep. Very familiar with that one. That one was one I always took a lot of comfort in. And I don't think that doesn't apply, you know, just because I'm not a practicing Christian. I mean, I think that God speaks to, the gods speak to, you know, deity, male and female, speak to human beings in a manner and way in which they can comprehend and accept at that point in their lives. That's why I think that, you know, I hold the overall belief that, you know, there is a male deity energy and a female deity energy, and that, you know, they make themselves known to different people in different ways and times, in ways that people can relate to, which is why there are so many different gods and goddesses, you know, that it's different aspects of the same energy making itself known to you in the way you need to see it at that point in time, and can work with and comprehend and understand it. For some people, that is Jesus Christ and Christianity.
Mm-hmm. I love Jesus. I have no issues with him, you know, but I mean, did I turn my back on the church? Yes. Did I turn my back on Jesus? No.
Right. You know? Exactly. Now, let me ask a little bit of personal information. So, you are married.
Yes, I am.
Your wife, does she practice with you, or does she have her own faith?
I think I tricked her into this, okay? Like everyone else, I mean, not everyone else, but majority of people in India, my marriage was also arranged by my parents, okay? The only good thing about it was, for lack of a better word, that we knew each other because we were in school together. So I was about 26, and my mom said that I think it's the right age for you to get married. And I said, well, I don't want to get married, but yeah, okay, because you're saying I will get married. That's how it rolls in India, by the way. So she decides to give an ad in the newspaper.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, my wife's dad had also given up the newspaper ad. So my father-in-law called my mom, and they met, and they realized that we were in the school together. And my mother-in-law was our teacher. So my father-in-law went back to my mom-in-law and asked, do you know this guy? And he was in school with, you know, our daughter, and how is he, and blah, blah, blah. So I think she kind of okayed it. And that's how, you know, we met. And we've been happily married for 12 years now.
Wow. Very good. Congratulations. Now, do you have any children?
Yeah, I have a 13-year-old boy.
Oh, teenager. How fun.
Yeah, yes. You want to take him away? I'll give freely.
Woo! My youngest is going to be 22 this year, I think. 22, yeah. 20, yeah, 1998.
We all know. So I'm going through what you've gone through already.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, boy, am I glad to be out of that. But I'll tell you, in some ways, it does not get easier.
Well, I think mine is easy, but because I believe that mine is a indigo child. And when my wife was pregnant with him, one night I was we were just laying down on bed, and I said that, you know, I know exactly when you're going to go into labor. And she said, what the fuck are you talking about? That's not possible. You're not a doctor. And I said, yes, I know. And I told her that this is the dress that you will be wearing that day. And then you're going to go into labor, and we're going to go and rush to the hospital. And that is exactly what happened. And I told her that we're going to have a son, even though we wanted a daughter. Okay. And we had, you know, decided upon the name and everything like that. But then I told her that we will have a son. She went into labor, and we were blessed with Shalom.
Oh, very good. Now, you were saying you kind of tricked her into. How did that conversation go? I mean, at what point did. Did you talk to her about it before you married?
No,
was
I didn't.
Something that you just practiced and she kind of saw and started asking? Or how did that go down?
No, I did not tell her. That's why I said I am an asshole. I am a bad person. I didn't tell her.
There's a lot of people that are nervous about bringing it up because there is still such stigma related to a lot of what's going on because a lot of people don't really understand it. So, you know, I don't blame you. I mean, a lot of people keep it to themselves and don't really even openly practice in their own home. So I didn't
tell her, and we enjoyed our marriage for about a year or so and everything. And one night we were sleeping, and she woke me up, and she said that she's been trying to sleep for the last half an hour, but somebody keeps pulling her hair, and she's not able to sleep. And I have always been a seer. I can sense and see spirits. So I saw that there was a little girl standing there, and I yelled and I told her to go and let her sleep. And that was the moment I think she was not shocked that somebody was pulling her hair. I think she was more shocked the way I spoke to the spirit and commanded it to leave.
Right.
And then she was like, oh, what the hell was that? We got to talk about that. And that's when I broke it to her that, you know, this is it. And this is what I do. And, So, but both of us, we were working. We were both, teaching in a university. She's done her doctorate in English, and so have I. So we share the common interest that way. But, we were busy with our stuff and everything. And I wasn't really, professionally, I wasn't practicing. But, at my personal level, I was. But then I think it's been 2 years that I've left my job, and I'm 100% devoting my time to my path and professionally practicing this. But I think she's kind of grown into it. She's very practical. She's also a Christian, but I don't think she believes in any religion. I think she's very practical.
Okay.
So I think sorted that way. And she says that, whatever you do, I've seen changes because we've seen a lot in our life, Natalie. We've gone through a lot of up and downs together. And we've seen, I think I should write a book on my life. It's going to be a Bollywood movie. Yeah, it'll be a Bollywood movie.
Ooh, lots of music.
Yeah. But then, she said that she's seen the changes that have coming into our lives and how we have evolved, and we've become better spiritually and emotionally and financially also. So I think it took time, but then I think she's on board now. I got my claws on her, Natalie. She can't escape now.
Well, I don't think she's struggling to get away. So I think you're good there.
Yeah,
I don't hear screaming in the background, so must be good.
I think I did something. I must have done something right, you know, in my previous lives that I deserve such a wonderful wife.
Because I can't she's standing next to you.
No, she's in the kitchen. She's cooking dinner.
I was going to say, geez, everybody should say things like that. I wish my husband was listening right now.
Yeah, but it's true though, because you know, if your wife or your husband does not support, if they support you, it makes a tremendous amount of difference to your self-confidence and the way you approach things. If I'm not happy in my own life, how the hell am I going to tell and convince my client that I can bring about change in your life? You know what I mean?
Well, you know, that is true. There's a lady that I studied under her to get certification to do Akashic record readings and clearings. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually still working on the program because I'm down to the more complicated and difficult part of the process. And I haven't, to me, it takes time to sit down and do it. And I need to be able to concentrate on what I'm doing and not be interrupted 500 times. And so I can't do it when my husband is home. But because I've been trying to see clients online and that kind of thing, I haven't had the time to sit down and work with it. So I'm kind of stuck in this one unit. And one of the things that she says repeatedly is that how can people expect you to help them clear their blocks and their restrictions and come to a place of abundance if you're not working from a place of abundance yourself? No one's going to take you seriously.
Yeah.
And I was like,
see, we have to look the part. We have to look the part. We have to be happy so that we can bring about happiness to people. When I meet clients for the first time, I tell them that, you know, whatever you've done, obviously it's not working. So you give me 6 months and let me try and bring the positive change in your life. But they will not be convinced if they don't see that in my own life. You know what I mean? Right.
Exactly.
So I don't know. While we're talking about teachers, I am doing my Marie Laveau ministry under a very, very controversial teacher. Do you know that? Denise Alvarado, she's a wonderful teacher. She's very controversial, but I like her. I like her teaching. It's very practical. And she knows her stuff.
What's controversial about what she teaches or how she teaches?
I don't know how to.
Well, here's the thing. What is it that you hear people that have something negative to say? What is it that they're saying about her?
You know, I am. I don't know if this is correct to say, but I think I'm very, very, I'm a very introvert person. I don't really get into arguments and all. I know people talk a lot of shit about me as well. But then what I've heard people saying is that, you know, she is self-proclaimed and she has no lineage and, you know, she doesn't know what she's talking about and stuff like that. But that, I mean, those are the same people who said the same things about me and I don't care. But I think she's a wonderful teacher and she knows her stuff. And she's teaching us about Marie Laveau beautifully, beautifully. I've done my level one. I'm doing my level two. She's amazing, amazing. And I told her that, you know.
Here's the thing about lineage. If you are called to a specific thing, I think that you're being called by the deity, by the divine. So I have mixed feelings on lineage. I understand people who are big on lineage, why they're big on lineage, because how can you truly understand if you haven't been taught in a tradition that's always taught? But at the same time, there are so many resources out there today that were not previously available in prior times when you had to be taught. And it's not as secretive or selective as it used to be. So you have access to being taught in non-traditional ways. Because when you pick up a book, you're being taught by that author.
Absolutely.
So you become part of that author's lineage at that point for the practices that you adopt from that, in my opinion. Now, again, I'm sure I'm going to get crucified for saying this, but that's, to me, that's truth. That's why you pick up a book, because you're wanting to learn from that author. And that author is using that book as a method for teaching multiple people across different planes. And so, you know, I find it odd that people say you don't have lineage
but I think
nobody is ever self-taught unless not picking up a single book. You're just starting to practice something. But if you've watched a movie and you're practicing what you saw in the movie, you were taught.
Yeah.
That was a learned behavior. It's not something you just picked up and started doing.
Absolutely. You know, Natalie, I think lineage has never been important to me. However, I think I will utilize this platform and tell people that I was, so when I was in the UK and I was working for Capital One, that's when I met Lisa McCormick. She was my high priestess, and she had a very small coven in Nottingham. I was in Nottingham, and the coven was known as the Coven of Secret Phoenix. And it was non-denominational, if you understand what I mean, because it was a Wiccan coven, but her teachings were Wicca and witchcraft mixed. And the second in command, you know, she was more of voodoo. So that's where my voodoo teaching comes from. So to all the people out there who are really, really bothered about my lineage, please listen carefully. I do have a lineage, because I know that you are really worried about me and you love me because you love to gossip about me. So please, I do have a lineage. It's just that I don't care about.
Right.
What do you think?
It's not something that you have to proclaim in order to give yourself.
No. Lisa, unfortunately, when I met Lisa, she was really, really old, and, you know, she was, I mean, I met her and I was with the coven for about 2 months, and that's when, you know, she left the job. I don't think so she was asked to leave or anything like that, but she was too old to take the phone calls or to check quality, and she left it, and that's when she started practicing. And unfortunately, she was suffering for cancer, and we lost her after a couple of months. She was a wonderful teacher. She made me scrub her toilets also. She was that strict. So I used to live with her, and she used to make me do all the chores because I had no money to pay for the fees. So she said that you do the chores and, you know, I'll teach you. But she was a wonderful, wonderful teacher, and she made me what I am today, and I owe it to her. So I am honored to have a teacher like that. And you know what, when I came back to India and you started that group, and I did my refresher about Wicca with Timothy and you, that course sort of shaped my knowledge, shaped how I was to go out there and, you know, deliver stuff to people. So that came through that. And I absolutely agree with you when you say that, you know, even if you just pick up a book, and the author becomes a part of your lineage, and you become a part of the author's lineage, and so on and so forth. Of course, that is exactly how it is. But then people also have to understand that I'm not in the US. I am in India. So my lineage can be anywhere. You know what I mean? And it can be anyone. You shouldn't really be bothered about, you know, my lineage, because this is a huge question. I don't know whether you're aware of this or not, but that's the biggest controversy in the Facebook world. As far as I am concerned, people question about my lineage and who is he? And, you know, he's just come into the market out of a sudden and, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So I'm not going to take any names, but there was a gentleman from New Orleans. He did a podcast with a certain gentleman from New Orleans, and there was a huge commotion because one of them was in my group and they were crucified, and then I was crucified because I allowed that posting in my group and everything. And I was like, I just want to ask people one question: that do you really have that much of time? I mean, clearly your practice is really not going well because you don't have clients. That is the reason why you poke into other people's lives.
Exactly. And you know, and I have issues with people that talk smack about other practitioners, because to me, if why do you need to talk smack about other practitioners? Mm-hmm. You know, now it's one thing if you take someone aside and you say, hey, you know, I see that you're learning from this person here. And, you know, I have some concerns because of this, this, and this. Okay. Cause I'm not saying there's not bad people out there that don't right. know what the they're talking about.
You can't do that here in India. I will talk about it. I'll let you finish and then I'll say what I have to say. Go on, please.
It just, you know, here's the thing is if the person is fake, eventually it's going to show itself. And I don't feel like, you know, I have to go out there and say, oh, this person is fake. This person is fake. To me, they're going to show their true colors. It may take a while and maybe not occur as soon as I would feel comfortable with, but I know when someone is not sincere in their practice, because to me, it screams out in everything you do. Mm-hmm. And so I don't feel the need to sit there and talk smack to people. You know, or about people. I never understood that. It was always very frustrating to me.
Right. So here in India, what bothers me is that, I'm sorry to say this, but then majority of people read it from a book and become a practitioner. They don't, they've not undergone a proper training. You know what I mean?
Right.
So either these people are businessmen and businesswomen, or they've studied under copy and paste college.
Right.
So they go well, onto the true. Internet. I mean,
there is definitely something to be said for having training, which was why I liked the group with Timothy Roderick, because we mm-hmm. had the author of the book who has yes. been trained formally. He's now passing that training on to us.
Yes.
So, you know, I think there's value in that, but I don't think that you have to have that to be a good practitioner.
Sure.
Now, that being said, I get what mm-hmm. you're saying, because I wouldn't want to go to surgery with a doctor that got his license from an online college and never actually, performed a surgery under the view of a qualified
other. Yeah, people. Just you imagine know, how it would be in the saying. Middle of, I'm sorry, in the middle of the operation, he'll be like, hold on, I skipped this lesson. I'm just going to have a quick tutorial on YouTube and I'll come back and operate.
Exactly. Now that I could, I mean, I see what they're saying. Do you know what I mean? I get what they're saying, but this isn't surgery. This is spiritual practice. And to me, spiritual practice is something that's deep down inside of you.
Absolutely. And it is not moral science, which is what is happening in the market right now, especially in India. Everybody's preaching moral science and calling it Wicca, which is crazy. Wicca is not moral science.
Right, exactly. And one of the things that I like about the practice of the craft itself is that you are responsible for your own actions. There Absolutely. Is no devil in the craft. So, you know, you can't say, oh, I was tempted. This creature made me do it. No, motherfucker. Mm-hmm. You did it. You are responsible for what you did. And you have to stand up to that and say, you know, I screwed up. Or, yeah, I did that.
Because you become a good Christian and say, Satan made you do it.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, you can't have the responsibility without, you know, great power comes with great responsibility.
And I love Spider-Man.
yes. you know, but it's true. Those words ring true. And that was something else that Andrea Hess talks about. Because mm-hmm. when you step into someone's Akashic record and you see what is there and you bring these issues to light, she's mm-hmm. very good about pointing out this isn't something that was done to them. They made choices that resulted in this karmic response. And so in order to shift that, they have to change their actions. These things are still mm-hmm. occurring because they're still living in that choice. They need to make a new choice.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay, I get that. I see that.
Yeah.
It makes sense to me. Now, I disagree with her in some regards, because I think that because one of the things that she says I totally disagree with is that
people,
well, it is, but she says that people that are in like abusive childhoods. Your mm-hmm. soul chose to incarnate with that group. You basically put yourself into that situation. Whoa. Now, I was abused as a child. I was sexually abused. And mm-hmm. I did not bring that upon myself. Mm-hmm. You know, now, did I make some bad choices related to that? Yes, but I did it out of fear. And my fears were substantiated when I did finally do what everybody told me I should be doing. So, you know, I mean, I disagree that your soul chooses to put yourself in that situation. I do think some people do things to you. Because she also says that nobody can send bad energy to you, that you allow it. It must resonate with you or no bad effect would occur. Basically, it would bounce off of you. To an extent, I agree, but to an extent, I disagree, because I do think that people can send bad energy your way, and if you don't know it's happening or understand where it's coming from, bad things will happen to you because you don't know how to protect yourself. She just mm-hmm. says that she finds that people having to put protections around themselves all the time is very disempowering. I kind of see what she means, but I also disagree with her, because I do think people do send bad things your way. You know, out of jealousy, out of, you know, anger, you know, and then in the same program, she turns around and talks about anger spears being directed at the person. But she's saying that they only take effect or affect you because it resonates with something in you and you're allowing it, basically. I kind of see what she means, but I disagree slightly.
Yeah, I would also like to agree to disagree with, because here in India, people, you know, I mean, when I say people, I mean practitioners, I think here people are insecure about the clients, because for them, it is not about practicing. It is all about making the most amount of money. You know what I mean? And these guys, so if a client, see people in India, and I say this, you know, with a lot of warmth and love in my heart to you guys, if you guys are listening, you know, you will listen to this, I'm sure, because I will share it, so you will listen.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
So, you know, people in India, you have to understand that the client has the freedom to choose any practitioner they want. They can come to me, they can go to Natalie, they can leave Natalie, come back to me, they can leave me, go back to Natalie. That's what they will do. You cannot fight with other, and I use the word fight with other practitioners, because the client went to somebody else and not to you. Right. You know what I mean?
There was something in that other person that resonated with them at that time. And so,
yeah,
you know, people go through seasons just like the planet does. So, yeah. You know, they
see when people, when, you know, when people come to me and they start the conversation with that, hi Anuj, you know, before you, I went to so-and-so person, but that person wasn't able to deliver. So I've come to you. That's when I hang up the call. Because mm-hmm. if he's doing that to that person, he will do this to me as well.
Right.
That's my, that's where I draw the line. I will not take up a case if the client starts the conversation by belittling another, you know, fellow practitioner, irrespective of how senior that is. Fortunately for me, Natalie, to be honest with you, people really look up to me, and I really appreciate that, and I'm very humbled, because I am one of the... So when I came back to India in 2009, there were only 2-3 people who were practicing, okay? And some of them have either left, you know, the practice,
right,
or they've left India altogether. So I am sort of, you know, it's a little higher in the chain, if I can say that. I don't know.
Right. No, I got you. I get what you're saying. Your role as a leader has moved up because other people have moved on to other areas or are no longer.
Yes. And people really love me and they listen to me when I say, but then I really, really want to use this platform and tell them that don't fight amongst yourself because of the clients. It's irrelevant. It will not take you anywhere spiritually. Because, right. You know, every time you feel jealous of somebody making more money than you and somebody having more clients than you, think of the first day when you started practicing. Think about that feeling. Relive that feeling. Why did you choose the craft, or why did the craft choose you? And that is when you will get the answer that this is all irrelevant. Money and luxury and all of this will automatically come to you if your relationship with your own deity is pure and strong. Because that is when you will be able to channelize them in your practice and you will be able to deliver results if you're doing this professionally. You know what I mean?
I agree. No, I totally agree with you. And that's one of the things that I have noticed. I was very frustrated that I couldn't get more viewership or things weren't moving along for me like I wanted them to at the beginning. But I wasn't as grounded as I should have been myself. So I agree with you 100%. If you are totally all in with what you're doing, then it will come to you when it is meant Absolutely. To come to you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I don't know. I mean, I have a feeling that the viewership of your podcast is going to really grow because you know what you're putting into this venture is pure. And I think the universe will reward you with that. And oh, also that I will. and the side note is that I will share it in all my groups. So I run a lot of groups on Facebook, and one of them is Craft of the Witches, which has about 50,000 people in it. Then the other one is Beginners Wicca and Witchcraft, which also has about 50,000 people in it. And then I run another group for Christian witches that has about 5,000 people in it.
That's very interesting because I just interviewed my friend Derry Carpenter yesterday, who is a Christian witch, and she has started a practice, a group on Facebook for Christian witches as well.
Lovely.
It's called the Christian Witches Roundtable. And
I am in it.
Interesting. Oh, you're in that group. See, there you go. There you go. So it's funny because I was like, I just interviewed her yesterday and I haven't had a chance to post her podcast yet because I was having trouble downloading the recording from Skype. I had to install it and reinstall it. So that one will be going up later today with yours. So I think it's funny. What a funny coincidence.
I started. I think I had two more groups before this one. This one is called the Christian Witches Coven. But I had two more Christian Witches group before this. And then, you know, they reached about 20,000-25,000 people in it. And then I gave it away to the admins and I moved out of it because it was getting too much for me to handle. But then I like to start these groups and make a sort of a safe haven for people to come together and talk about things that you can, that they cannot in, you know, with other people. Because loneliness and not being able to talk to other people is a major issue right now in society. Right. And I think people need people to talk to. So I like to create that platform for people. But one of the reasons why I created this Christian Witches Coven group on Facebook is that I started my path as a Christian Witch Coven. I had to, because all my my upbringing, my culture, the way I thought, my thought pattern, everything was Christian. There was nothing witchcrafty about it, you know. Everything was Christian because I had that upbringing and that conditioning that, you know, my mind has gone through since childhood. And, you know, so that's when I moved on to Christian witch, and then, you know, it changed to empath and then prophetic, and then Wicca came in, and that's when it really shaped. And I always tell my students also that, you know, if you want to start studying about Wicca, You know, Wicca will give you the base and the knowledge. And if it calls out to you, that's your path. If it doesn't, it will help you reach and achieve the goal that you want to. Because I do offer a 1-year degree course and a 3-year degree course here in India. But these are all, you know, face-to-face courses. So, I mean, I've worked really hard to make people understand the concept of Wicca in India, and I'm still working. And what I've done with Wicca, I would want to achieve that with Voodoo as well. And I would want people to understand and respect that how beautiful the religion is and how powerful it is. And it is not dark magic, it is not black magic. There are no mandatory animal sacrifices in it.
Right.
You know, you can, we always have a choice. You can choose not to do certain things. And yet, see, a Loa or a spirit will not come to you, Natalie, and demand for a life. You know what I mean? They right. will, because these, I believe, and this is my belief, that the Loas or the spirits are hungry for love. And whichever way you worship them and give them love and respect, they will take it.
That sounds correct to me. I mean, that makes sense to me. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm not as familiar with Voodoo or Voodoo as a religion. I didn't get a lot of exposure to it growing up. Like I said, mm-hmm. the main exposure I had was The Serpent and the Rainbow, you know, as a child. So right. being very young when that movie came out, it was traumatic to watch, but I understand that it's very different than, you know, that's one aspect of it. That's how one practitioner chose to use it, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know that it's necessarily, I wouldn't consider it black magic. And that's one of the things that, you know, it's funny you bring that up, because we were watching a show called 90 Day Fiancé Visa. Basically, uh-huh. it's a show here. It's like a reality TV show.
Oh, I've seen it.
Yeah, about how these people meet these other people. This one gentleman mm-hmm. was met a young
Indian guy
in Haiti. Ooh. No, he wasn't. Oh. This was a white guy from the United States who met a young girl. I mean, he's 47, she's 20. So uh-huh. I kind of personally am going, boy, that's a big age difference. What mm-hmm. could they have in common? But they seem to have a good relationship. They really seem to care about each other. So I'm, you know, good I'm for them. Not judge that one, but she is a practitioner of voodoo. She went to see a voodoo priestess because she had a rash that mm-hmm. she wanted treated. And my husband's like, he needs to run away. I'm like, girl, you need to stop and listen to what the priestess is saying to the young lady. And mm-hmm. after she spoke with the priestess, because the priestess immediately understood that this young lady was talking to not one man, but two. And yeah. she told her, you need an older person who will guide you, but you need to make a choice and you need to mm-hmm. stick by your choice. Mm-hmm. Or none of this is going to go away. And then
yeah,
she
took her in and played her. Really, really powerful.
Yeah, and my husband was like, well, that wasn't what I was expecting. I said, no, you were expecting her to take a chicken, lop its head off, spray the blood everywhere. I know what you're expecting, but that's not all of what it is. Yeah. I said, you have a very poor understanding, and my understanding is not great, but it's better than that. So, yeah. you know, he's like, well, you know, that was not what I was expecting. And he just, you know, now he's kind of thinking it over, you know. It's worrying in his head, because he's one of those people that won't let things like that go. Right. So he's gonna be.
It's about the movies, you know. Nope. It's I would blame the movies. That's how they have conditioned our mind.
Exactly.
And you know, to be honest with you, Natalie, anything that man doesn't understand, they're automatically afraid of it.
Exactly. That is exactly true. Yeah. Well, Anuj, it was wonderful to have you on the podcast. I hope that at some point you will come back and be on the show again, because I'd like to hear a little bit more about the specifics of the workshops that you do. So
right.
Let's agree to have you back on at some point in the near future, and we'll go mm-hmm. talk about those workshops and give you a little opportunity to plug yourself. Sound like
all right. All right. Yeah.